Welcome back to another episode at Bitcoin, Fiat and Rock'n'Roll. This is where we explore the intersection of traditional finance and blockchain and digital money. Today, and this is a disclaimer, we're recording at a very special location that is the Electronic Love Festival 2025. So bear with us in case there is either background noise or some lack of concentration due to electronic dance music. And with us is Daniel. Daniel, thank you so much for investing your precious time on a Friday evening at an electronic dance musical or festival. Before we dive into our today's topic, that is in particular crypto or even more crypto fraud or even more specifically Bitcoin fraud, before we do so, I would love to understand who you are as a person, as a human, and then next, what made you decide to opt for a career in crypto? I mean, you could have become a banker, a top manager at a McKinsey consultant. Why did you decide to choose a career in Bitcoin? But first, back to my first question, who are you as a human?
Yeah, thank you very much for the introduction. So my name is Daniel Winkelhammer. I was born and raised here in Salzburg, where we also record this podcast today. I'm now 32 years old, and yeah, I was already interested in technology back in my youth. So when I was a kid, I tried to assemble computers and also destroyed some of the computers of my family. So back then, so I was always like really introduced by technology and also by computers. Then I studied in Salzburg informatics. So I learned how to write source code, how to develop programs and engineer. And later on, I went to Vienna to study also business informatics. So I was also interested in the intersection, not only technology, but also how to connect it to digital business models. And that's why I chose the study. And after finishing it, I went straight to, financial services. So my first station in my job was at Allianz insurance company, so one of the biggest insurance companies in Europe. And I was working there as an internal consultant. I was doing consulting in all of Europe, basically mostly in Central Eastern Europe, basically providing advice to our colleagues how to implement insurance systems that we have developed in Austria in other locations. And at my work there, I realized very fast that in such a big company, you cannot change things. So if you have like good ideas, there's like so much bureaucracy that you cannot change. So my drive was really I was young and I wanted to make it bold in my job. And I was pretty fast frustrated that I couldn't do it. So I went back to Salzburg and I started a career as an external consultant. I was at a small agency where we had big projects at, for example, Porsche Bank, also Red Bull, Spar, basically most of the big companies here in Salzburg.
As a freelancer?
No, this was like we were an agency, a pretty small one, where I was employed. And I was working there as basically a consultant in those big companies. And in that time, I already had a huge interest in Bitcoin. So this was around like 2020. So my first like encounter with Bitcoin was already back in 2011. So when I was in school studying programming source code, we had one colleague that was already like using Bitcoin as a exchange or like as a money for paying his service.
Exchange.
So back then, most of the use cases were like paying with Bitcoin. So, and then 2017, I really dug deeper. So I tried to understand how Bitcoin really works, and it really kept my attention. Also, not from only from a technological side, but also from the economic side. And I was really into it. And in 2020, when the corona crisis hit, I had some more time in my job that I could focus on another project. And this was also the time when I started 21 Bitcoin, because we had the mission back then to really make Bitcoin accessible for a broader audience and also make it super simple and secure. And then we started it in 2020, and it was like really a success in the beginning. And so I quit my job also at the end of 2020. And since then, I'm full-time into the Bitcoin industry. Yeah,
nice. So you did a good job here. You answered both of my questions in one shot. That is, we understood who you are as a human. And my interpretation of your answer, at least, is you're not merely driven by money. So you're fascinated by the technology of Bitcoin, at least Bitcoin, potentially even other crypto assets. I think we'll learn about that later. You're driven by making an impact, by change, by bringing innovation to people. That's super cool. Yeah. And with your answer, we also understood what brought you to Bitcoin. That is, you stumbled across it during your studies. And your studies, by the way, are the second common denominator of ours. The first, obviously, is Bitcoin and blockchain. And the second is our subject of studies, that is information systems or business informatics. So yeah, I'm super happy to spend my Friday evening with a brother in heart. That is, we both enjoy Bitcoin, we both invest in Bitcoin, we both work in the field of Bitcoin. For you, you run 21 Bitcoin. For me, I'm co-host of this podcast, and also as part of SAP, I'm a part of its digital currency hub team. So we both do it, at least you entirely, and for me as a part for a living. Yeah. So good job. You answered both questions in one shot. And with that, I propose we move to the core of our conversation today. That is a topic really dear to my heart. That is a crypto fraud. Only some days ago, a colleague at work on our way to lunch told me about a friend who was addressed by a Coinbase employee, a fake Coinbase employee, asking him to send a substantial five-digit amount to Coinbase. And that obviously was fraud. And this individual fell into this fraud. So today is not about the actual crime the usage of Bitcoin to finance criminal activities. But today it's about criminal activities to get Bitcoin or to get any crypto asset. And you're the ideal expert today because you're at the forefront. You serve multiple retail investors and institutional investors. And I would assume, but please do verify, I would assume that both of them to some extent suffer from crypto fraud. Can you confirm this?
Yeah, sadly, I can confirm this. So we serve around 80,000 retail investors over across 30 countries here in Europe. And we have experienced over the course of the last years, the crypto fraud is evolving. So more and more like fraudsters, scammers are leveraging some of the characteristics that Bitcoin has. For example, the finality of the transactions. So once you send Bitcoin transaction on the blockchain, you cannot reverse it. And this is something that fraudsters are using to steal money from people. Yeah, that they want, or probably they think they have like legitimate offers where they can invest their crypto or their Bitcoin, and they can make even more money out of that. And they are tricked into sending Bitcoin to an address, to an external wallet address that can be like, as you explained, for example, a fake Coinbase employee that is giving you like a Bitcoin address where you should send the funds to. And this is something that we are experiencing. And this is something that is also like rapidly evolving because more and more people are investing into Bitcoin. And I think also like a broader audience that has not so much technical knowledge and probably do not understand all of the details that involve, for example, Bitcoin transactions. So this is like a tool that criminals use nowadays.
Yeah. So what I would propose is before we deep dive into what forms of fraud actually exist, and particularly those that you observe in at 21 Bitcoin, which does focus on Bitcoin, right? So before we deep dive into the different forms of fraud here, why is it a problem particularly relevant in the blockchain space? So, I mean, we could say, scamming or fraud exists in any domain in life. I mean, you could also receive a fake email by a, let's say, HSBC or Deutsche Bank employee asking you to send 10,000 euros to whatever bank account. So what's the specific relevance for the blockchain space?
Yeah, I think there are two distinct problems there. One is that a lot of people heard from successes that people have made with crypto or with Bitcoin. So they made huge fortunes. So they heard stories, they read about that. So they think there's like an easy way to gain a lot of money. So I think people who are not well educated on that are primed to be a bit more naive, because they think, oh, with crypto, with Bitcoin, there's like a potential legitimate potential to really multiply my wealth in a short time. So I think this is the first one. And I think the second one is, as I explained, the finality of the transactions, and also that you can easily move Bitcoin or crypto around the world almost instantly or in a very short time frame. So scammers, fraudsters are mostly sitting out of the European Union and, for example, in Russia or also offshore. And they're like, the criminal investigation and also processing of it is super hard, because there are like these legal obstacles if you are transferring the money out of your country and out of the European Union. So regulators or criminal enforcers do not have like the possibilities to really catch those people.
Okay, so the specific nature of blockchain attracts more fraudsters, because at least they assume that there is more to gain and that it's easier to gain, and that they assume like an individual that started investing Bitcoin like 10 years ago underwent a significant upside and therefore is a more attractive target than, let's say, an average fiat investor with less gains throughout the last 10 years. But then these fraudsters also assume that it's easier to run away, and that the settlement is final and you cannot chase the fraudster down by just calling his or her bank and resending the money. Yeah. Okay. With that, probably now is a good point in time to deep dive into these different types of fraud, in particular the ones that you observe. Probably before we start to classify them and probably sort them by relevance, before we do so, can you illustrate an extreme case of fraud that you observed at 21 Bitcoin?
Yeah, for sure. So we at 21 Bitcoin, we do a lot of stuff to protect our customers against that. So we have a lot of like markers. For example, we monitor IP addresses. We look at device history. So for example, if a user is from Germany and suddenly logs in from, let's say, Georgia or Russia, we try to restrict his account and to call the customer and to inform him. But we also inform our customers beforehand about a lot of the common cases that we observe. But in some cases, people are like neglecting all of those warnings. And we had one customer that was sending six figures to an obvious scam. And we discovered it. So we had a call with the customer and he explained us what he is doing. And we told him, hey.
What he did or what he was doing in the moment?
What he already did. So
the damage was done already.
So a bit of the damage was already done. But we informed the customer that we think this is obvious fraud. And we just stopped him because he wanted to send more even. So he had sent already some funds in Bitcoin, but he wanted to do more, and we stopped that. And we called the customer and we talked to him, and he didn't want to listen. So he said, no, I want [S2] Wow. [S1] To do it. And it even has gone so far that he had lost money, and he went to his bank and called his bank for like a loan. Because he thought that if he pays some more money, he will get like the initial investment, because the fraudsters obviously try to get as much money as possible. And they tell him, hey, you sent 50,000 euros, but if you pay like 20,000 again for taxes or some stuff, you will get even a bigger return. And so he was calling his bank and that he was needing a loan. And also the bank, we were in contact with the bank where he requested the loan because of the case. And also the bank told him that this was a scam and he didn't get the money from them. And 2 days later, he received a loan from an online bank where he didn't mention what he was doing. And yeah, he also invested this money into Bitcoin. And we had like written confirmations that he was like taking all of the responsibilities. He was aware of all the risks, even though we warned him and his bank warned him. He sent the money and basically he lost it. Yeah.
Wow. So what kind of carrot stick did he fall into? What did they tell him? What convinced him to go that far?
Yeah, I think some people are like very technical illiterate. So they're not like really knowing what is going on behind the scenes. And there are some platforms that show you fake values, fake gains. And some people cannot really differentiate if something is real or not. And those fraudsters try to make it look real. But if you ask like one, or people that are a little bit like financially educated, they would tell in a second that it's not a legitimate platform. There's no like imprint. You don't have an address. You don't have a company register, for example, for that company. And people are not, they cannot tell the difference. And the fraudsters are sometimes also trying to have like a personal relationship with them. So they are trying to do this for weeks. Yeah, for example. So they're trying to get a connection with the victim. And if they succeed in that, people are like really confident that those people, they won't betray you. They're real. And then they get also like... They see the gains, the fake gains, and they think, yeah, they are rich. They're now buying, I don't know, like real estate with that. And yeah, I think that's a real problem. Yeah.
Wow, this is real, and this is so scary. I mean, on the one hand, we want to bring the long tail of retail to crypto, and on the other hand, we fight this tough fight, if you will, against these tricky fraudsters. So, yeah, how do you clarify this fraud? And most likely there is a existing classification, like there might be you as a CEO are endangered, and then in that fraudsters could like force you to give access to some of your assets. Then your customers are, of course, as you just exemplified with that extreme example. How do you classify these different types of fraud in your... I bet you have it, particularly as you're undergoing the MiCA licensing process at the moment, like a risk framework to classify these risks. How do you classify the potential frauds?
Yeah, they're like different frauds. For example, so mostly what we have experienced are like really those retail focused frauds, where basically most of the time it's investment fraud. So they're like fraudsters faking different investment opportunities. And I think this is more than 90% of all the frauds that are happening. So
but this isn't necessarily a problem for you as 21 Bitcoin. It's just making your customers invest potentially their Bitcoin investments in a problematic investment. But this is not where you as an organization are in danger, are you?
I would say partly because, of course, we need to protect our clients, and that is also what we are doing. So we have a lot of resources dedicated onto fighting such crimes. So we don't want that our clients lose money, of course. So we have a team of around like 8 people that are just doing customer support and also like internal transaction monitoring. And really have daily calls with a lot of our clients to really inform them. So our approach is we want to financially educate our user base, our clients. We want to tell them what is going on and also give them like easy to understandable actions and also advice on what they should look for. Yeah. And this is also like we have reduced it dramatically once we have integrated more of that educational effort into our platform. And yeah, we are trying to advance that also so that we have like a bit of a better view of the transaction behavior of the customer, for example. And once we detect some abnormalities, that we send the customer instant and also like tailor-made messages to his situation and to his risks. And I think this will also enhance it, but of course there's no 100% guarantee. So I sometimes also compare it, for example, to the case if I go to my bank right now and I tell them, hey, I need 10,000 euros in cash, and I receive it, and then I go onto the next street to a random guy that is playing like those little how's it called, Hütchenspieler in German, so like gamblers, and I bet 10,000 euros on that and I lose my money. I cannot come back to the bank and say, hey, I just lost my money in a scam. The bank needs to warn you. So the bank needs to tell you, hey, there are risks associated with some things, and we are trying to do that also. But yeah, we only have like limited power what our users are doing, of course.
Yeah, I'm here still exploring the whole breadth of risks. So you very nice explained those customer facing risks. But how about your organization yourself? Like, I mean, the naive assumption is that wherever, what do you do to protect the Bitcoin in your custody? What do you do to protect your employees that might be approached by fraudsters themselves? How do you protect yourself? I mean, in the What Bitcoin Did podcast, I heard stories from the UK where they really hijacked individuals and threatened their lives to get access to Bitcoin. Isn't that on your mind too?
Yeah, for sure. So we have very broad risk framework implemented in our company that spans from like technical risks, also operational risk, financial risks. So for example, the Bitcoin that we custody for our customers are 100% segregated from our company funds to don't have like commingling there. We also store 100% of the assets for our customer in cold storage. So we use a technical provider for that, BitGo. This is one of the most established and oldest crypto custodian, which they also have custody insurance over 250 million US dollars. And we also structure all of our
for calls, the institutional clients, like
for all the wallets. So basically we have different cold storage wallets, and we structure that way that no wallet exceeds the 250 million coverage threshold.
Yeah.
So that even if one wallet gets hacked, for example, or gets stolen, the insurance can cover it. So we invest a lot of effort there. We also have dedicated roles in our company, like a chief of information and security officer that is also doing like training once we onboard new employees, like security trainings, mandatory trainings.
Yeah.
We do it like periodically. So we have like also different channels where we report such attacks. So for example, if an employee is called from a fraudster, or we receive like fraudulent emails, we have channels to report it and to respond on that. So we invest a lot of effort there to have our company and also the client assets very, very safe. Yeah.
Yeah, that's why I also heard of that technique in which a WhatsApp account is installed that uses the CEO's profile, like your picture, your name, and then you send instructions like, hey, I'm Daniel, can you please send this and that amount to this and that wallet, which is yet another form of social hacking. Yeah, so I hope you didn't observe that yet, and if you did, I don't know if you could admit it.
Yeah, we have observed that. So there was different Telegram profiles that used my name and also my profile picture, and all of the employees were aware of that, so we escalated that very quickly. And we also have like a lot of procedures in place that no one employee, not even me as a CEO can send significant funds alone. So we have like different methods to sign and co-sign transactions, also from the fiat side and of course on the Bitcoin side, so that no one individual in the company can send funds to anyone.
I just here want to make sure that we, beyond your many, many retail investors, also cover potential institutional customers of yours. So first question, do you serve institutional customers?
Not yet. So we're focusing on retail clients, but we will accept institutional customers later this year. Yeah.
Okay. And does this depend on the MiCA license or is this a different discussion?
It is, I would say... Normally, it would be a different discussion, but we are doing like this change of business model or the like adaptation of our business model in line with the MiCA. And so in our case, it depends on the MiCA, but normally you could also do it without that. Yeah.
So, yeah. Okay. So do you here prepare in a different way? So to protect your institutional customers, because that's another a whole different game. Like the amounts are large. I mean, of course, it's not even sure if it's as easy to trick an employee of an institutional customer as it is to trick your or my dad who invested in Bitcoin potentially. So how do you prepare for that whole new world when it comes to fraud?
Yeah, there are different processes also in place for institutional clients. So there will also be, like, as we as a company have co-signing methods, there also we will be co-signing methods for institutional clients. So that if you have like different managing directors that you can select, that you minimally need two of the managing directors to sign transactions and to really move funds. We are also doing whitelisting of wallet addresses so that you cannot move funds to a not whitelisted address. We also do like time periods locking, for example, if you have like a new wallet that is integrated or added to your account. So there's like this time periods where you don't, or where we hold the transaction or put it on hold for a different for like 3 days, for example, so that we have enough time that if something is fishy, that we can stop those transactions. So there's a lot of effort under the hood, yeah, to make it as secure as possible.
And with that, we've very naturally landed into the most important question, how to tackle this fraud. And all the techniques you outlined obviously are necessary because investors are not careful enough. So stated differently, if all investors were educated and careful enough, none of this would be necessary. So wouldn't it be even cheaper and smarter to just explain to the whole world that fraud exists and you gotta be very, very careful. You gotta do your own research. And before you send money somewhere, you really need to be totally clear where you're sending it. What do you think would be the most effective approach in educating the world, or let's at least say the retail investors out there, that crypto investments are a different game because you cannot reverse it?
Yeah, I think the best way is to really make your product firstly secure and really educate your users on the right time. So if you do that before a user is onboarded, has significant amount of money, he will skip it. He will read through it. Really need to make it also engaging. You need to have the right time points to really have the right information in the right place. So I think that's very important. And also I think what is giving us an edge, so maybe in a conversation it made it look like that there's so much fraud. It isn't. So of 99% of all the transactions are fine or more. So there's only a small part of that. And I think we have an edge as a Bitcoin focused company, that we are like having an edge educating our users about the Bitcoin network. So we don't need to have like all these different mechanisms that we need to educate our users about. Also, users then learn how to use Bitcoin and get familiar with the transactions. So I think this is very valuable if you really invest a lot of money, that you really know also like how it works. And if you have like 100 coins or more, there are so much differences that you need to educate your users about, which makes it really, really hard for, I think, crypto exchanges that have a lot of tokens, that have multiple more employees, thousands around the world, where you don't have like a connection to your employees. So a lot of attack vectors come when you get like really big and also have a very complex product offering. And this is also why we're focusing only on Bitcoin. So not only because we think it's the best investment in the crypto, in the digital space, it's the prime asset, but also from a security standpoint, also from a regulatory standpoint. It's really clear that Bitcoin is here to stay.
Even the SEC never had a problem with Bitcoin. Gary Gensler, one of the most hated men in crypto history, potentially, well, probably that's Sam Bankman-Fried, but with quite some distance, there's certainly Gary Gensler, the previous SEC chair, who really fought a tough war against crypto, but not Bitcoin. So at least empirically drawing on the SEC history, you're very right. Yeah, it was always easy to do Bitcoin business in the States.
Yeah, and what also speaks for Bitcoin is that is trackable. So the Bitcoin ledger, the Bitcoin blockchain is open for everyone. So it's super transparent. So in the first place, if you don't know which wallet is belonging to which identity, you cannot like reveal the identity. But if there's like one connection, also like in 3 or 5 or 10 years, you can reverse follow all of the transactions and you can caught the criminal. So basically, the Bitcoin blockchain is also not very good for doing crime because of the transparency of that open ledger. So there are other cryptocurrencies which are like better for using it for criminal activities than Bitcoin.
Yeah, so I think if there is a small bite of knowledge I all want you to take with you today, is that when it comes to fighting crypto fraud, it's not just handing out a big book of how to counter these threats, read it, and then expect that any investor, particularly retail investors, read it and then carefully live after it. No, that won't work. What might work and what proposition is the right information at the right time in the right mode or way of conveying the knowledge. Yeah, so like before you open the wallet, you give the information what it means to have a wallet. Before you buy your first sat, you explain what it means to have a sat and that sending one is irreversible. That's how I understood your approach. Like,
yeah, you really need to make it context specific. Yeah. So you need to know what is the user doing or what is likely to doing, and then give him the right information to really not confuse him. If you overload him with information, he won't make sense of it.
Yeah, so with that, I propose to finish our conversation about the very problem of blockchain fraud and answer at least two questions that our audience still has in mind our after conversation. The first and foremost is, what's the story behind this festival? Why is 21 Bitcoin here at the festival inviting loads of podcasters, Bitcoin only podcasters? Probably Bitcoin Fiat and Rock and Roll is the only non-Bitcoin only show here as a guest. So what's the story behind this?
Yeah, we at 21 Bitcoin, our mission is to bring Bitcoin to a broad set of people, to broad audiences. And we think that this opportunity here at the Electric Love Festival is like a great way to bring Bitcoin a bit out of the Bitcoin bubble,
the
Bitcoin space. So we have, I think, almost 200,000 visitors there. We are very present with our Bitcoin podcast launch here. We have a lot of podcasters that are enjoying this view. We have a team that is going around the festival, asking the people about Bitcoin, educating the people around Bitcoin. We have cool car shuttles where we branded Bitcoin on the front of the cars and really getting some attention there. And yeah,
I can certainly confirm that. There was a bouncing Maybach that brought me here. So good job. That was fun.
Yeah, they made the people look, and maybe they ask, yeah, what's about the Bitcoin thing? I need to educate myself about it. And I think that's our mission, that's what we want to achieve, that people talk about it, and that people lose their like fear of it, and yeah, take time to financially and educate them around Bitcoin.
All right. And probably the last one that I carry always on my mind when I speak to Bitcoin-only entrepreneurs. I mean, there is Relay. Sorry to mention a competitor, but I think you're cool with it. There is 21 Bitcoin. Is it really an entrepreneurial or a business decision to focus on Bitcoin only, or is this ideological because you just don't believe in any other assets? Because you might leave quite some money on the table because it's just not giving access to any other crypto asset beyond Bitcoin.
I think it's both. It started from an ideological mindset, but now, 5 years after the start, it's also a business opportunity because we like really focus on that user experience, also that easiness of accessing Bitcoin. And we have a lot of investors that want to invest long-term into the digital asset space, and their Bitcoin makes the most sense. So also, if you want to invest large sums of money, you don't go and buy the next altcoin that is popping up. So you probably do that to gamble a bit, and there are already like a lot of exchanges out there where you can do that. But really educating your users and helping them, being a partner for them on a long-term journey to build their wealth in the digital asset space makes sense only in Bitcoin in our mind. And this is also what our clients value a lot about our service.
Yeah, that was, again, the perfect pitch of how I interpret you as a person in the beginning, that you're not money. I mean, to some extent, you must be, otherwise you wouldn't start a business, but that you're not merely money driven, because then you would offer all these other crypto assets, including shitcoins, meme coins, to just earn more money. But that's not what you're doing. I really like that. Yeah, to conclude our conversation, so I think the next big milestone for you is the MiCar license. So is this, do you perceive it as a feature for your company or as a bug that limits you, or both?
I would say I tend to see it as a feature because it enables us to really get deeper into the financialization of Bitcoin. So for example, we are just exploring new products and offerings for our users, especially with Bitcoin-backed loans, for example. So you can have like one Bitcoin on 21 Bitcoin and get like a fiat credit line there. Mm. And this will only be possible to have, and you need like partners, like banks for that. And with the MiCar license, you get like the approval of also partners like banks to work with you. So I think this gives us the opportunity to not only grow our market, because we can also expand our business into different countries, but also expand our product offerings and give more opportunities also to our clients and potential clients in the future.
All right. Yeah, let's probably finish this very conversation, which I really enjoy, because it's the prime setting. You can be on a Friday evening at a festival talking about Bitcoin. I love it. So probably take this last question as your pitch to all these investors out there, your advice, how to secure. What's your most important message to all these Bitcoin investors regarding the mistakes you want them to avoid?
I would say you need to know what you're holding, what you're gonna invest into, because there will be a time when crypto and Bitcoin will also fall, so the prices will fall. So my tip would be that you're educated, that you don't fall into panic and sell your assets when it's a bad time. But that you are convicted and have like a long-term vision, that you can use like those opportunities for your best.
Daniel, thank you so much for your insights, for your knowledge, in particular for building business in crypto. Yeah, you're growing the space, you're contributing to the space. That's absolutely precious. And best of luck with the upcoming MyCar license.
Thank you very much.
The views expressed are solely the personal opinions of the hosts and are provided for informational purposes only. This podcast does not offer financial or investment advice. Always conduct your own research and make well-informed decisions before investing. Please be aware that the hosts and guests may hold cryptocurrencies or digital assets discussed in this episode.